Our motivations in the practice change over time. And as we practice over time, we become more conscious of the motivations and they become essentially more realistic. I've seen people go from the motivation to be enlightened to a much more humble, realistic motivation just to be present. As we come closer to this process, we begin to let go of the far-reaching desires associated with what we hear in the teachings. So motivation is an interesting question that I like to ask myself occasionally, just out of the blue, what is motivating me in the practice? Because when I'm aware of what is motivating me, then there's much more energy, impetus. And to date, each time I check in and ask that question and contemplate to find the answer, whether it's immediate and something that is present in my thinking, or something that I have to be patient with as it arises, I see that the motivation has turned towards the more humble willingness to take responsibility for oneself, for myself, aligned with the intention to engage the practice as a means of purification. And that is something that works in such a simple way. For instance, when I ring the bell 3 times at the end of a sit, or when the practice leader rings the bell at the end of the sit, for me, the space between the beginning of the resonance of the bell through to the moment that I either hit the bell again or allow the sound to just disappear is a space in which I effectively check my mind. And what I mean by that is that, is there a devotional awareness in that space of the bell that allows for continuity of mindfulness? And it's so interesting to see the, almost like vapor, the self-conscious mind kind of merge with the devotional mind and have a sense, oh yes, well, there isn't really a lot of concentration right now. And so it's a kind of test for me around, okay, that the mind is a little bit vulnerable to a lot of conditioned thinking and perception. This is not something I'm teaching, but something that I, like all of us, discover that there are little ways that we begin to use life that allow for us to check to see if our practice is operating out of the clarity of intention and motivation. And as we more and more assume this role of guardianship over this mind and body, and assume the responsibility to embody and to be present and to meet life from here, then it becomes easier to sense really what's needed in the practice. And the role of concentration is essential, because without concentration, then the mind is, as the Dhammapada referred to, just flip-flopping. Hard to guard, it's said. And guarding the mind is different than trying to control it. guarding the mind, again, assuming the role as a guardian, a guardianship over the mind, because we have the capacity to do so. And there have been a number of different points in the retreat where I've made suggestions about how to approach our experience in a way that sees into it objectively so that we can respond kindly and wisely, whether it be the feeling tone of the body. We have to enter into an embodied awareness in order to know this feeling tone and to care. To care requires patience and tenderness. Last night I was talking about three qualities that we will, by the nature of our interest in the Dhamma, that we will work with throughout time and that we will fulfill. And one of them was patience, and another was metta, or loving kindness. Loving kindness, or metta, is a concentration practice. We have been developing concentration. Our minds are more focused, even though we might be assessing the experience of our practice from a negative point of view, what it isn't rather than what it is. Nonetheless, this retreat is very still. Not to say there isn't restlessness, not to say there isn't turmoil, you know, within your experience, and indecisiveness and confusion and so forth, but essentially concentration is something that is very palpable in the air and in the general feeling tone here. Everyone here has agreed to some degree to be present and to learn the nuances of the mind that grows in its clarity as a result. Metta is an opportunity now to shift the object, meaning that it's the same objective, but the object is different. We've been working with the awareness of the body, and that particularly the experience of breathing as our object of concentration. And now, for those who wish, you might want to experiment with metta. And I put it this way because I want it to be a choice that you make out of interest. And it isn't a choice that you have to make immediately. If you feel like there's a momentum in your practice as it is that you wish to attend to, then please continue. And the purpose of the interviews that we're now meeting in is for us together, or for you, to really assess, okay, where is the integrity of your practice? What is it calling for? Some of you are here already with the intention to practice metta and actually already have begun. And some of you are very interested in continuing with the mindfulness leading to vipassana practice. But I want to say that metta also leads to vipassana, meaning that it's the force of concentration that builds up that allows for certain degrees of concentration and therefore the ability to be with things as they are. And that only has meaning if one is operating within that degree of concentration. Metta is extremely helpful to steady the mind. In fact, for some, it is more effective than the awareness of breathing. And one reason for this is that there is a mental dimension to it where we use phrases as the object. And so it helps to bring a culminating force of focus. And then it can very, very easily include the awareness of the body as well. But I don't want to say too much about what you might expect, but more to say that if you've not experimented with metta, that you might find it interesting to do so. It also addresses that question of purity of heart, because it is the practice that allows for one to begin to counteract the internal experience of ill will. And that by doing metta, what we're doing is strengthening the capacity to see into all the dimensions of this particular mind state and how it functions. So metta, like any practice, sometimes is pleasant, sometimes it's unpleasant, sometimes it's neutral. But in the unpleasant dimensions of practice always, there is the process of purification taking place. Because as one stays steady with the practice that one is intending to engage, then as a result of that, whatever it is that arises becomes purified. And of course, what I mean by purification is not a sudden and complete purification, but is according to the Buddhist perspective. This process of awakening, this process of purification will take all of time. But all of time is present in each moment. I'll say more about concentration and metta this evening in the Dhamma talk. For those of you who would like to practice metta, you may have already done so, and you may have a set of phrases that you are using. But the ones that I was taught and that I offer are, may I, we address I, be free or safe from all forms of danger and harm. May I, this being, have mental happiness. May I have physical happiness. And may I have ease of well-being. These phrases are a process of bestowing, as if may you be well. It's may I be free from all forms of danger and harm. May I have mental happiness. May I have physical happiness. May I have ease of well-being. As we concentrate these phrases, they become like a kind of medicine, and they come alive within us. I might say that I personally live with these phrases to various degrees in my life. I keep them concentrated out of a sense of personal responsibility as a yogi, so that they are operative subconsciously, and so that they arise consciously and intuitively when needed. So that oftentimes it works in a way that is instantaneous, that some form of ill will or fear, which is the other factor that metta addresses, some form of ill will or fear arises, and metta arises spontaneously as a response. And in doing so, what it does is it allows for the energy in the unwholesome to shift and become reallocated as energy that moves in the direction of cultivation of metta. There's a physics to this process of practice. I don't know how one would live as a human being without awakening metta within the heart. I experience it as too painful because we do not know what to do with our suffering and therefore we avoid it. So metta is the opportunity to continue to cultivate concentration and as well the opportunity to begin to experiment to see how this powerful purifying practice works as a way for us to become more aware and more malleable in the face of our internal experience. And our internal experience specifically associated with fear and ill will. I'll talk more about fear this evening. Fear as an existential experience that arises with birth. Ill will as a reactive process against the pain of life. Very basic. So, for those who wish, beginning to hear, beginning to integrate, beginning to work with metta phrases. Beginning with oneself. May I be safe or may I be free from all forms of danger and harm. May I, and sometimes it's helpful to call up an image, some of us are more visual, or one's name, or just the sense of this body here, this being. May I have mental happiness. May I have physical happiness. May I have ease of well-being. If the mind feels as if it has to understand or dissect or the phrases in order to establish some meaning in them, then not to bother, just to continue with the mindfulness, with this body breathing. Because there needs to be a certain intuition that this is going to be helpful. And a willingness to allow for it to be simple. So I'll continue repeating the phrases for a few times so that then you can integrate them yourselves. May I be free or safe from all forms of danger and harm. May I have mental happiness. May I have physical happiness. May I have ease of well-being. May I be free or may I be safe, whichever seems to have the best and clearest resonance. May I be free or may I be safe from all forms of danger and harm. May I have mental happiness. May I have physical happiness. May I have ease and well-being. May I be free or safe from all forms of danger and harm. May I have mental happiness. May I have physical happiness. May I have ease of well-being. In your own voice, establishing a rhythm that seems organic for you. Continuing with the mental phrases. Yeah, be free or safe from all forms of danger and harm. May I have mental happiness. May I have physical happiness. May I have ease of well-being. It's not unusual to forget a word as it's being stated. It's not unusual to have to begin again. Sometimes in the beginning it's helpful to use the movements of breathing as a way to provide a rhythm, a cadence. As with any concentration practice, the mind becomes distracted and then unsimply returns and begins again. This is meant to be a simple and relaxed practice, and becomes simple when we can just allow the phrases to be the sacred vehicle of liberation, giving our attention and sustained presence of mind to the repetition of the phrases so that they can do their work. So that the metta can awaken and permeate this mind and body. May I be free or safe from all forms of danger and harm. May I have mental happiness. May I have physical happiness. May I have ease of well-being. Returning Thank you. knowing the distinction between thoughts and thinking, and the object of concentration, the metta bhavana that we're working with, returning. sometimes there's the challenge, not always, when doing a Brahma Vihara practice, in this case the metta practice, for the mind to sort of assume an authority and say, well, actually, these phrases are not quite right for me. And let me see. Let me reorganize them. Let me find what feels best. We try to align the process with what we believe is supposed to be a feeling. And so just here in the very beginning, I'd like to address a couple of things that might help you to remain focused in your practice. Because we are feeling beings, but feeling is really something that we're becoming clearer about in terms of sensation. And as we become more aware that we are looking for pleasant sensation, we can oftentimes look towards the quality of metta as something that is somehow obligated to provide for us a sensation associated with well-being or love. And in actuality, the practice is most powerful when it is just rote. Because that's where it is that one can just work with that balance of focus and energy. Because the purpose is to maintain, to build up and to maintain continuity with it. And yet the mind will keep interjecting itself into the process as it's looking for what it feels it wants from it. And so sometimes it's just helpful to note the wanting mind and to let the phrases be just simple. Let them represent the intention, the interest, the willingness to cultivate metta. I've seen people where people will spend an entire practice period or even almost an entire retreat trying to find the right resonance. And instead, what we wind up realizing is that that which is trying to reorganize the experience is that which is trying to control everything anyway. So, again, just allow for it to be as simple as possible. Effectively, one's mind is either conjoined with the metta phrases or not. And that's extremely simple, in a certain way, more simple than breath awareness, where the sensations shift and change and become more subtle. And I'm not saying that one should favor one over the other, because in truth, each has its important role, and each becomes more dominant as a practice at different times throughout existence. But here it's very clear what the practice is. Sometimes it'll require more effort to establish that clarity and continuity, and otherwise it will seem to have a life of its own. In which case, rather than just falling away into the oblivion of the mind in that moment, just keep adjusting however it is necessary within the consciousness, within the moment, to stay present with the metta phrases. With walking meditation, it's slightly different than with the mindfulness and the embodied practice. Because what we're doing here is oftentimes, it's helpful for me to see is as if I am carrying this object, and the intention is to keep it awake. So while sitting, there may oftentimes be a kind of emergence of the sensations of body and breathing, and this is lovely. And sometimes in that emergence there seems to be a kind of support, but then the phrases themselves remain our object. As well with walking, there might be a sense of the body in the process of walking. There might be a moment of the awareness of breathing. And yet what we're doing is remaining focused in the phrases. And sometimes it's helpful to experiment while doing walking meditation, to just choose a short path and then see what it might be like to adapt your movements to in a way that is supportive of the continuity of the practice. This is true with any practice, but what would it be like to move in a way that's supportive of the continuity of the metta? Sometimes when doing walking meditation, if it feels as if the range of phrases just is too challenging, then before you drop them completely, just stop and see if one or the other phrase seems to have more resonance for you. Like, may I have ease of well-being? I don't know what it might be for you. And then just continue to just work with that one phrase, whereas when you sit back down, just pick up the full range of phrases and see how this goes. One thing I know for sure, this is a blessing that you're bestowing upon yourself. For those who've decided that you wish to experiment with the metta or to experiment further, whereas, of course, it's your choice. I'll continue with interviews now, and you might want to check forward in case you haven't, just to see if your name is on the list for today. I might add, not only bestowing upon yourself, but by the nature of this practice, although very, very personal, whatever state of mind or intentional practice we're engaging is something that then we share with others just because we are united, we are unified. So what is present and what is cultivated within oneself is actually the basis of our relationship with the world.